Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, September 9th, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 281.
September 9th, 2006.
Right now it's 72 in Irvine, 75 in Dana Point, 74 in Hollywood, and it's 70 in Burbank. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
And thank you, Deborah. 11:06, I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Let me give you my phone number, and we'll talk a little bit about what's been going on this week in technology. That's what the show is all about, technology. And I say technology, not computers, because it's, of course, a lot of computers and the internet. But it's also MP3 players and cell phones and camcorders and PDAs and, of course, home theater, space launches, biotech, anything with technology. That's what we talk about. 1-800-520-1KFI. I've been doing this particular beat for about 15 years now, nonstop, full-time. Since the early 90s, since it was Windows 3.0, let's put it that, since it was DOS 6.3, let's put it that way. I might put it in more perspective. When I started doing this on the radio, the top of the line processor was it a 386? I think it was a 386. It's been a long time. A long time. I do TV shows in Canada and Australia. Used to be here, but now it's only in the Commonwealth nations. Of course, I do this radio show, and I do about a dozen podcasts at twit.tv. I have about 5 books a year, including the Leo Laporte 2006 Technology Almanac. Oh, somebody asked me if we're going to do it in 2007. I don't think so. I think I'm going to. The demand, frankly, has gone down for those, and I think I'm going to start doing online books. More and more, I'm of the opinion the best way to do this stuff is just to create it yourself and distribute it yourself. Thanks to computers and the internet, you can do all of that. The only thing you have to figure out is marketing. And I figured out marketing. You just do TV and radio shows, and then you got all the marketing you want. Simple, isn't it? A couple of big stories. Actually, there's several big stories in technology news. One will be Tuesday when Apple makes some announcement. I think it's pretty clear. I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind that they will announce a movie store. Amazon announced their own movie store on Thursday. The idea is buying movies not in on a disc, but online, so you can download them. I'm not convinced this is a great strategy. You go to the movie store and you buy a DVD for what, 10, 15, used DVDs, less than that, $20 new. And you don't just get the movie. You get about 9 gigabytes of stuff. You get the extras, the trailers. I mean, all sorts of great stuff. I love the commentary. That's one of the things I love to do most is watch a movie, then watch it again with the director commentary. There's so much. You learn so much about filmmaking. It's fascinating. Maybe that's just me, but it seems to me that for roughly the same price as you would buy an online movie, Apple's saying it'll be about $15, maybe $10 for older movies. But what you'll get is a lower quality version of the movie, right? And it will be without any of the extras. And it'll take you, how long is it going to take you to download? Quite some time. I don't know if this is a great plan. It's expected. It is to be expected. I expect a new iPod, probably with a bigger screen, suitable for watching movies. Probably a widescreen, right? That makes sense. And maybe that's the market, especially if it's $10. I could see $10 to buy Casablanca, put it on my iPod, and then get on the plane. Maybe. That might make sense. I think the price needs to be lower. We'll see. Maybe they'll do that. Of course, no one knows what Apple's going to say until they say it. But the invitation, and I got one this week, was it comes in the email. That's what they do. They just the shortly before, and they're very strict. You have to, you have to show ID. It has to be, you have to RSVP and show ID. You can't bring somebody else. And the invitation has curtains and a spotlight. It's showtime. Clearly a movie implication. And this week, they announced new iMacs, big 24-inch iMacs based on the Conroe chip, the Core 2. Maybe it's the Merom. I don't know. It's the Core 2 chip. Very fast chip, very nice. Relatively expensive, a couple of grand. But a big 24-inch screen. I think for a lot of people, the iMac now is the sweet spot on the desktop Macs. You know, if you're a pro, you're doing Photoshop, you're editing, you know, movies, then okay, the high-end Mac Pro. But for most people, the iMac really is. I mean, it's very simple. It's all in one. Big, and now a choice of, you know, small, medium, and large screens. I think it's a good choice. So that's one story, but we really won't have the final details till next week on that one. Another big story, shall I talk about Lonely Girl 15 or Second Life? I'll start with Lonely Girl 15 because I brought this up last week. Lonely Girl 15, obviously a handle, right, for somebody. In fact, it's somebody on YouTube who's posted now, I think, 60-some movies. Short little supposedly video blogs of a 16-year-old girl, Bree, homeschooled in her bedroom. I have to say, there's something, the minute I saw them, there was something fishy about them right away. They're professionally edited, for one thing. I mean, maybe Bree really has, you know, Final Cut Pro, and she knows what she's doing, but they're lit pretty well. They're shot pretty high quality, and they're definitely edited professionally with professional sound effects. So it was always a little suspicious. Well, now the truth comes out. And I think there's a backlash. People love these amateur videos on YouTube. They love it that it's an amateur doing it. That's part of the appeal of it. And we cut them a lot of slack because it's amateurs. So things like the OK Go video on the treadmills, yeah, it's cheesy and badly shot. There's only one angle. There's no edits. But that's, you know, we love that because it's amateur video. It's home video. And, it, you know, here it is. We're sharing all this cool stuff. I think people really hate it. I know I do. When they've been taken advantage of. When it what appears to be an amateur video that you're enjoying, all of a sudden you find out it's professionals. And the whole thing started to come unraveled when a website did a little investigation of the emails, the Lonely Girl emails were coming from within CAA, the Creative Artists Agency, the big Hollywood agency. that's a little suspicious, isn't it? That's where Lonely Girl lives, what she lives at CAA. I was suspicious just from the quality. Well, now the creators have admitted. I still don't. Well, I don't buy it. I think there's more to it than this. They've admitted they're not a big corporation. There's just a couple of them. That's possible. This is on their MySpace page, on the the Lonely Girl 15 website. Our intention from the outset has been to tell a story. Well, they did that. It's kind of cool because there is a plot. And things start to come unraveled, and there's a little mystery. So you could see. I mean, it's pretty clear if you, in retrospect, that it was not some kid doing this. They say a story that could only be told by using the medium of video blogs and the distribution power of the internet. I disagree, but all right. A story that is interactive and constantly evolving with the audience. There was some speculation that it might be a promo for a horror movie because it, you know, she's in jeopardy. There's some stuff going on. They did not say who Lonely Girl 15 is. Clearly, an actress. Very obviously an actress. She doesn't look like she's 16 either. It's very interesting. Now, you know, some people thought, oh, this is cool. In fact, the woman who runs a Lonely Girl 15 discussion board said, oh, no, I knew it was obvious that it was actors, and that doesn't matter whether it's independent or it doesn't really matter. It's true. I mean, you know, there's somewhat of a suspension of disbelief, a little bit of credulity involved. If it's entertaining, you're going to watch it. Look at Lost. I mean, basically, this was kind of like Lost. It was evolving in the same kind of way, not as big budget. But I wonder, I think some people are mad because they really did believe Bree was what she said she was. Also, there's a copyright that was issued by a Los Angeles lawyer, Lonely Girl 15. So, I think you're going to see a movie. I think there's more to this even than they've admitted. Don't you think this is, and that's what really gets people mad when they watch these things and it turns out to be viral marketing. It's just marketing, a clever marketing campaign for some major Hollywood production. That's when people, that's when there's backlash. What, I mean, it can work, but not if it's contrived and if it's misleading. Look at what happened with Snakes on a Plane. I mean, that was just picked up by the internet, by blogs and websites. And I mean, that's the best publicity you could get. And I don't think it cost him a penny. When that movie came out, every blogger in the country was ready to see it. It's an interesting world we live in. I'll talk about the Second Life issue in a bit, but if you are on Second Life, which is a 3D chatting world, really it's a second life for a lot of people, there has been a security breach there and you need to go in and change your password. But I'll talk a little more about that in just a bit. Really, I want to take your calls. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. 1-800-520-1534. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
The Jesus Christ Show.
Father, do I contact with visions and dreams and that type of thing? Yes, you see that throughout Scripture. It does take place. They're with great purpose and specificity. No one ever said, gosh, I wonder if that was God. When you question it, usually it's not.
The Jesus Christ Show, tomorrow, 6 to 9, on AM 640, online and on demand. KFI, AM640.com.
My friends, if you are on lowly dial-up, you probably feel like, when I'm talking about things like Lonely Girl 15, you feel like you're on another planet. You're like out of touch, but you don't have to be. You don't have to be. You could be part of this revolution. All you need is high-speed internet, and frankly, it's not expensive. It's easy. You could get high-speed internet for just $12.95 a month from DSL Extreme. A great internet service provider. They're my internet service provider. And it's so easy to set up. When you sign up with DSL Extreme, you get a box. If you can plug in a phone, you can set up your DSL. And you don't need a second line. If you're paying for dial-up and you're paying for a second line, you're paying so much more than you have to. And you're not getting the service you deserve. You're not getting high-speed internet. Another thing I like about DSL Extreme, there's no charge for the setup. There's no fee. There's no charge for the modem. That's free. It's guaranteed for a year, $12.95 for a year. It's not some two-month, three-month deal. And you don't have to buy any extra services for them. They're not selling long distance, folks. This is it. It's what they do, and they do it well. They do it better than anybody else. High-speed internet in your house for $12.95 a month. Call 866-2-GETNET, 866-2-GETNET. You can also visit them online at dslextreme.com. There are some geographic restrictions, so you might want to check it out. But don't put it off, because I don't know how much longer they can do this. 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme.
KFI News, fueled by the worldwide resources of Fox News. KFI, AM 640.
On KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Frank in Culver City, you're first on KFI. Hello, Frank.
Hello, excuse me. Hello, Leo. The reason I'm calling is my mom is starting to think about a new PC, and I was talking to her, and I got the requirements that she wants down pretty well, I think. Overall, she's looking for something that's DSL compatible. She does, you know, basic stuff with Excel and Word, a little light photo work for real estate work that she kind of does on the side. She's kind of thinking about some internet radio compatibility going, you know, thinking forward in time, and maybe some movie downloads later on.
Okay.
Ideally, she wants something under $1,000. Now,
did you say laptop or desktop? You didn't say.
Desktop,
desktop,
definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I really couldn't find any product reviews at the various Leoville sites. And
yeah,
when
you know, I don't really do product reviews per se. I mean, I answer questions like this, but I'm not a reviewer. I don't have the patience.
Yeah,
concrete reviews, PCMag.com is a good place. But I'll be honest, you know, people don't really review computer systems anymore because they're pretty generic.
Oh, really?
The differences are very small. I'll tell you what I would recommend.
Yeah.
You say under $1,000.
Yeah.
I think probably a Dell.
Okay. Maybe the Dell B110?
Well, you can either go with the B or E, which are the lower end ones, or go with an XPS 410, which is right at the the top of your price range. But I think a little bit of a better machine, to be honest with you.
All right. That's very interesting because I this is what pushed me to call you. I did start digging around the PC Mag review site or the review pages. They really kind of talked down, if I remember right, on the Dell B110, saying something about it's kind of older.
It's older technology, and that's why it's so cheap. When you buy a cheap computer, you're buying older stuff. There's nothing wrong with that, what's happening, PC Mag probably isn't the right place, in a sense, to buy or choose a computer for your mom, because your mom is not an enthusiast, she's not a business user, and that's who PC Magazine speaks to.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. I mean, Consumer Reports might speak more to your mom, but I'm not sure I really trust their computer reviews either. The truth is, I'll be honest with you. Your mom is going to get a Windows machine, it sounds like.
Yeah, of course.
Well, of course is not necessarily the way I'd say it, because she's going to also have to deal now with spyware and viruses and all sorts of issues.
Well, fortunately, we do pretty much what you see.
Are you going to take care? Are you going to take care of her? Are you going to take care of her?
Well, I'm tech support, so
okay,
I guess
you
that
are.
Means yeah.
All right. Okay, so really, I'm talking to you now.
Yeah.
As long as you're willing to take care of her and keep her clean, that's fine. There is an advantage to going with Windows for only one of the things that you mentioned, and that is for watching movies, because things like Amazon, for instance, Amazon is going to only offer Windows-compatible movies. Cinema Now is Windows. Now, Apple will probably do a movie store, which will probably, in all likelihood, be Apple-only, or at least iTunes-only, which means you'll run it on Windows or Mac, but it will be Apple-specific. That's where you really get in trouble. Everything else you mentioned, a Mac would be a better choice for, frankly.
Then, of course, there's theological issues, too.
It is, and it's purely theological, understand. It's not technical.
Yeah, I know.
As long as you know they're theological, it's fine. I don't want to talk you out of your religion. That's your religion, baby. But you just have to understand that you're going to be supporting her, and if there are spyware and virus issues, you're the point guy.
Yeah, and I know, and fortunately for me and for her, she doesn't do anything weird or overwhelmingly dangerous.
Right.
She does listen to you. She,
I think that's
Windows
fine.
Defender, this and that.
I think a B or E series Adele would be fine too. She's not going to be particularly demanding. The reason you buy up is because you want to get the latest, because it's going to be obsolete less soon. It's all going to be obsolete. I like the 410s because you have now. Of course, that's $1,000 there for the bottom of the line 410. And if you want to get, which I would recommend, if you're going to get a 410, you get a Core 2, then you're spending a little bit more. So maybe in your price range, it's fine to go with a B.
All right, this is more than helpful.
But I do like Dell. I think they make quality equipment. Their margins are slim. They're not gouging you. And I think that they stand behind their machines in ways that some other vendors do not.
Yeah, that's one more thing. She's also getting a little nervous about, she hears every now and then from wherever, I don't know, that Dell tech support isn't the best.
It's not as good as it used to be, but it's no worse than anybody else.
And I tried
everybody's
to tell her
gone
that,
downhill.
Too.
And they've all gone downhill because that's the biggest cost, frankly. When you're making 10% margins on a machine, you can't afford to have great tech support. That's the price we pay for these cheap machines. You're her tech support. She won't be calling Bob in New Delhi. No, sirree. Guess what? Bad news. She'll be calling Frank in Culver City. And you'll be the one who's coming over. Okay, Mom, I'll help you. I generally, for people who don't want to or have the ability to become security experts, I do generally recommend Macs. I think for home users, Macs are the best choice. But if you're sold on Windows, that's fine. You just got to know that you're going to be responsible. 1130 KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Deborah Mark is in the KFI News Center.
Stimulate yourself all weekend long. KFI AM 640. More stimulating weekends.
Shut 1138. KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Linda La Cañada, KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, I just bought the brand new Mac 24-inch.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I'm so excited. I just bought it yesterday.
Now, did you get it or is it going to come in the mail?
It's coming in the mail.
Yeah. Wow, I'm jealous.
Well, it gives me time to have...
second thoughts, buyer's
second
remorse.
Thoughts. All right. Maybe should I go to the Mac Pro?
Oh, you know, it's funny. I asked that same question. I do a podcast called Mac Break Weekly, and I asked that same question on the show yesterday. Because I'm asking that of myself. I wanted a Mac Pro, but I'm thinking, wow, when I looked at these new 24s, those are pretty cool too.
Yeah.
So here's how we broke it down, and I think I agree with this. For most people, an iMac is exactly the way to go. These are Core 2 chips are very fast. These are fast machines. That 24-inch is a massive screen. It's huge. And it just kind of a great deal. I mean, look what you're getting for what you paid about $2,000, $2,100 bucks for it.
Well, I maxed it out, so it's more like $3,000.
Okay, you put out big hard drive and more. How much RAM did you put in it?
500.
Yeah, 512. You're probably that's fine to do that because Apple charges exorbitant rates for their own RAM. But it's probably a good idea down the road to put more RAM in. And certainly, if you're going to run Windows ever, it's going to be necessity.
My big thing is Photoshop.
Then you want more RAM for sure for Photoshop.
I'm not a professional retoucher, so I'm wondering, do I need Mac Pro?
No.
Will it
no,
help?
No, no,
16-bit?
The Mac Pro is only really for people who are doing things like 3D rendering, heavy-duty video editing. You know, they're really taxing the machine. And the main point of the Mac Pro is it's got higher-end video cards and more expandability. So I'm telling you, it is for pros. It's for the shops that are doing big stuff. I think now with this addition of the 24-inch iMac, Apple really has said, in effect, we want the iMac to be the machine for most of our users. Only the high-end users need anything more. And I think even if you're using Photoshop, you're fine. Now, you do want absolutely more RAM. For Photoshop, you want 2 gigabytes or more.
Well, oh, yeah, I did get 3.
I'm sorry. You said 5.
I get the RAM and the.
I got it. So you're talking about the hard drive was 512.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You've got plenty of RAM.
Okay.
So you have a 500 gigabyte hard drive and you've got 3 gigabytes of RAM. Oh, that's an awesome machine.
Oh, good.
Oh, I would not in any way trade that in.
Oh, it makes me feel much better.
Yeah, no, I think you did exactly the right thing.
Even working on 16-bit files, which right now it's slowing down my machine.
Oh, wait till you see. Now, understand that you're not running the native Intel Photoshop yet.
Right.
So you won't really see the biggest. You'll see a speed increase, but you won't see the biggest speed increase until until CS3 comes out, which will probably not be till, you know, for four or five months, not till probably the spring of next year.
And there won't be an advantage of having Mac Pro over...
No.
The iMac 24 when the new...
The real advantage is expandability and higher-end video cards. And a video card is not going to help you at all.
Oh, that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Now, how about transporting it to our beach house? Is that hard on the iMac 24?
No, I don't think so. Be careful, of course. And I would keep the box because then you can put it in there and it's got the nice foam packaging and so forth. The only thing you have to worry about is the screen, really. Everything else will be fine.
Okay.
And the other thing with an iMac is because it's more like a laptop. It's all in one. You want to make sure cooling is good, that there's, you know, clear ventilation and so forth. But I think they're beautifully designed machines, and the 24 knocks me out. I think that's a very good choice for somebody who's doing Photoshop.
Oh, terrific.
Nothing wrong with that. It's funny because the Mac Break Weekly is with a bunch of pros, and they all tried to talk me out of the Mac Pro and say, no, all you need is an iMac.
I was surprised the Apple support gal I talked to also said all you need is the iMac 24.
They've actually done a good job at this, but better than they usually do, of delineating the machines now. The Pro really is aptly named. That is for a business that does content, professional content creation, particularly video. They're using Motion. They're using Final Cut HD. They're doing big projects. That's who the Pro's for. For everybody else, including Photoshop people, the 24 is a great choice.
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad I could help your buyer's remorse. In fact, I'm just jealous. That's all. And I want, those new iMacs are very, very pretty. And it, Apple, I'm willing to bet now. Now looking back in hindsight, and I will be the first to admit, I was moaning and groaning when Apple said, "Oh, we're going Intel." I thought, "Oh, what a terrible idea." Clearly, Steve Jobs had been briefed by Intel. Look, Intel really wanted Apple as a client, right? He'd been briefed by Intel. Intel said very clearly, "This is our roadmap. By this time next year," because they were talking a year ago, "we will have these incredible Core 2 chips for both laptops and desktops. You will be able to do, with the new Woodcrest chip, you'll be able to do dual and quad Core 2 chips, effectively giving users 4 and 8 processors." And I think Steve said, "Okay, you know, you've convinced me." Because when he goes to IBM and Motorola and says, "What have you got?" They say, "Well, the G5 is a really good processor." And they got nothing. "What, have you heard an announcement about the G6? They've got the cell processor. That's what's going to be in the Sony PS3, but it's still unclear how great that's going to be." I was feeling like there was more to the IBM Motorola PowerPC platform, but I'm not seeing it. There is a G6, but I'm not seeing these chips. Whereas Intel, which a year ago, Intel didn't look so good. They were struggling. AMD was kind of eating their lunch. Intel had made a very bad choice. They went down a bad path with the Prescott chips, the Pentium D. And they were paying the price. Their chips were hot, underpowered. You know, not nearly the performance of AMD's chips. And so that's why I was upset. I thought, this is... what are they doing? And clearly I was wrong. This has been a very good decision. And now we're seeing the results. A very clear line of products going from the MacBook, which is, and the Mac Mini for low-end, undemanding consumers, undemanding users, home users. A great range in the iMac line that really pretty much covers, you know, the sweet spot of the market. Most home users, even Photoshop high-end users, and then the Pro for the really demanding users who want to upgrade. They want, you know, more memory and all that stuff. And I think this is a great line. Listen to the discussion on Mac Break Weekly, because I think it was the pros, Alex Lindsay and Scott Bourne, really broke it down pretty well. That's available. That's on the front page of twit.tv right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 11:46. We'll be right back.
Rush. He'll set you right. Monday, 9 to noon. KFI, AM 640.
Seven away from noon, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. And Carol's on the line from Palos Verdes. Hello, Carol. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We just got a new HP computer, and we want to hook it up to the Internet.
Okay.
And it comes with Norton Internet Security. And so I think that might be enough to get on, but what do we need to protect our new computer?
I'm underwhelmed by Norton Internet Security, by the way. You should know that. I'm kind of on record as not recommending it. But
well, yeah, I figured it came with the machine.
You got it. Right. Yeah. So it's free. Here's what pretty much any Windows user needs to do to protect themselves. And by the way, this is all documented. I have a article on the website, leo.am, under the tips section for using Windows safely. It's all documented there.
Okay.
So number one is behavioral. It's you. People get into trouble because of what they do online. And so it's really important that you and, you know, if you've got kids or anybody who's using that computer, understand there are some things thou shalt not.
We're pretty careful. We're older. We don't have any children in the house.
Yeah, that makes it a little safer. But for instance, and the older people do this all the time, you cannot open email attachments.
Right.
That's how viruses are sent. And a lot of times they're sent from somebody who looks like they're a friend of yours. In fact, it may even say your friend's name on the email.
Uh-huh.
So you can't say, sometimes I hear people say, "Oh, I never open attachments from somebody I don't know." Well, that's too bad, because all the viruses come from somebody you do know. So attachments are very dangerous. Now, the real rule is don't open executable attachments or attached files that can contain viruses. The problem is nobody is very few people are very clear about what's safe and what's not. So I make a more blanket rule, which is just really don't open attachments. Sometimes people say, well, that's okay. I scanned it with my antivirus. That isn't okay. And the reason is these email viruses spread faster than the antiviruses get updated. There's a 24-hour to 48-hour window between the time the virus is spreading around the world and the time the antivirus companies can come up with an update. And that's assuming that you update regularly, which most people don't. So scanning it with your antivirus, only opening attachments from friends, those don't work. The rule is don't open attachments. Number two, don't click links in emails. Email links often hide bad stuff. In fact, HTML email, web page email is bad in general. You know, a lot of times you'll get an email that has pictures in it and fancy fonts and formatting and stuff. That's actually a web page that's being sent to you. And just as any web page, that can contain dangerous bugs. So you've got to change your behavior, number one. One of the reasons that experts, computer security guys, often don't run firewalls or antiviruses is because they know what behaviors are safe and what are not safe. So be very, you know, you've got to be very assiduous about not opening attachments, not clicking on links in email, not going to websites, and when the website offers you something free, not saying okay, not downloading free software. You know, the website says, I want to put this great, you know, fancy cursor on your page. No, I don't want any of that stuff. So, and right. But older people are good about that. It's usually teenagers that are the ones who say, free stuff, I'll take it. I got to click that monkey. Don't do it. Number two.
We're mainly concerned about what kind of antivirus and protection.
I understand, but the reason I start with behavior is no antivirus will protect you if your behavior is not proper.
Right.
Number two, even more important than the antivirus, I'm going to get to the antivirus. I know that's you want to know, but I'm saving the dessert for last. First, your vegetables.
Okay.
Number two is make sure you run Windows Update regularly and apply those critical patches. Tuesday, for instance, the second Tuesday of the month, unless there's really an emergency, Microsoft updates. This Tuesday, there will not be a critical patch, but there will be a critical fix for Office. So you really want to make sure that it's actually an option in the system control panel to have updates come automatically and be automatically applied. I recommend turning that on.
Okay.
Because Microsoft's been the victim of a number of what they call zero-day exploits. That is, the day they announce the patch, a hacker goes, oh, let me see, quickly works hard, says, let me see what it's fixing, and writes an exploit. And that day, sites spring up all over the internet taking advantage of that flaw. So if you don't patch, as soon as Microsoft offers a patch, you're at risk. And when there is a risk, it means going to a website, a malicious website, is all it takes. You don't have to, your behavior doesn't matter at that point. Just surfing. And this happened with MySpace. 1 million people got viruses from MySpace because they hadn't applied a Microsoft patch. So it happens on big sites as well as small. Now we get to the software protection. But again, until your behaviors are fixed, software is not going to do you any good. You should have an anti-spyware program. Microsoft offers one for free.
Microsoft which?
It's Microsoft Defender, it's called. It's Microsoft.com/spyware. They also do an antivirus with that. That's, for a lot of people, very easy, called OneCare. It's I think, $30 for three computers, and it's actually, for a lot of people, the easiest way to go because it's from Microsoft. It does the patches. It does the antivirus. It does the anti-spyware all in one. My favorite antivirus, a sponsor on the show, Nod32, but you've got any antivirus is okay. It's probably okay. There are advantages and disadvantages, which I'll talk about at some other time, but because I don't want to do an ad for Nod32 here. But any antivirus is probably adequate. Spyware is a big problem these days, to be honest with you. Your antivirus is not so important if you don't open attachments, right? You should also have a router. I don't believe in software firewalls. This is one of the reasons I don't like Norton Internet Security. It causes issues, compatibility issues, accessibility issues. People sometimes have computer problems because it's so aggressively protecting you. Whereas a router, one of those things that distributes the internet to multiple machines, gives you the same kind of protection without interfering with your system at all. So instead of a software firewall, I like a router. If you do all those things, you're okay. Read the tips. It's at leo.am. Click the tips section. But honestly, it's you're safe using Windows if you're careful. You don't, it's not like you're oh, I'm just going to get these bugs instantly. But you do have to follow these procedures. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1159. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
September 9th, 2006.
Clouds moving in late tonight, lows in the 50s and 60s. Sunday, sunny by afternoon, about 5 degrees warmer than today. It's 74 in Fullerton, 72 in Irvine, 69 in Redondo Beach, 70 in Burbank. KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. It's 12:06. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Thank you, Lisa. Good afternoon, everyone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. If you want to talk high tech, this is the place to do it. High tech could be anything, by the way. If you want to talk about the shuttle launch, I don't know much about it, but we can talk about it. I know there are a lot of people here at JPL and other NASA installations that have been very instrumental in all this stuff. I just think it's exciting. I'm excited about going to Mars. We're still on for that, yes? I think that's cool. I'd like to sign up for that. If you need any old fat guys, I'm ready. I'm ready. I think you do. I think, you know, we're not well represented. The XXL geeks. Darren Kitchen of Hack 5, one of the geek podcasts, was handing out t-shirts, asked me what size I needed. I said, I need a geek size. He gave me triple XL. I said, not that geek. I'm not that geeky. Double XL's fine. Oh boy. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. Let me go back to the phones. Let me find my window first and click the right button. It's Kevin, Arizona, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Leo. I have HP PhotoSmart 2710 printer hooked up to my PowerBook. I have the latest PowerBook before they canceled the line. And I installed all the drivers, the latest software from the HP site, and it put four processes into the system. And I do a TCP dump in the terminal, and about every 2 to 5 times every second, there's a communication over my wireless network between the computer and the printer.
Right.
And I was wondering if there's some way to manually disable those processes and activate them only when I need them.
It's an all-in-one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's probably why it's more than just a printer driver. It's there's probably other stuff involved, maybe a scanner driver or a fax driver, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Does it do the scanning over the wireless as well?
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yes, it's exclusively hooked up on wireless, and it scans my documents, prints, does everything all through the wireless network in my house.
I know when you see stuff like that, you go, oh, it's using bandwidth. I don't like that thing going on all the time. But truthfully, it's minor. It seems like that's a lot, but honestly, a bit every second or so, it's not a big deal.
Would it be acting as a wireless beacon to let hackers driving through the neighborhood know?
Oh, your wireless is sending that out without your didn't say so anyway.
Okay,
that's
all right.
That's the only way
IP of my computer.
It's the only way a wireless can work. So
right.
Even if you in fact turn off the SSID, and you know, many people do this SSID hiding, it's still sending out a beacon.
Right.
That's just how it works. And in fact, SSID hiding is ineffectual because a hacker just picks up the beacon and the information is in there anyway.
Right.
So it only is effective for somebody who's not using hacking tools. So the truth is, if you're using wireless, you're announcing your presence.
Okay.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
All right, and these kind of drivers, these processes that are in memory, they should just stay in there and run.
I would. I mean, you may be able to shut them down, but then you'll have to start them up again when you want to use it. I don't.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of making an automator script or something that would, you know, start them up when I needed them and shut them down when I was done with them.
You could, what you should probably do is open up the resource monitor.
Okay.
And see if the is that where you're seeing. You said a TCP dump is where you see the process, but do you or the activity? But do you see the process in the resource in the activity monitor?
Oh yes, in the activity monitor, there's four HP processes that are always running.
So that's how you know about it. Okay,
right. Yeah,
you could shut it down, and you probably could script it. I don't know how scriptable the activity monitor is, but you probably could script it to shut those down. But you aren't going to impact reliability, and I don't think you're going to really improve any performance in any significant way.
Okay, I spent most of yesterday on the internet trying to find, you know, what these processes are and you know, the what would do to eliminate them, and I couldn't really find anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
I think, thank you, Leo.
I appreciate it. Really enjoy your show.
I'm glad you listened, Kevin. That's great. I think what happens, in some ways, the best analogy I give is medicine. You go in for a test, right, or a series of tests, because it's, you know, because it's time. You haven't been in for a while. And they always find something. And it's kind of like that with your computer. Once we start knowing what's going on our computer, I think we're often horrified. When I started talking, and this was years ago, about using the Microsoft System Configuration Utility, MS Config, to shut down startup processes, all of a sudden, for the next 3 or 4 years, I would get calls every day and letters and emails every day from people saying, oh, do you know how much stuff's running? Oh, my gosh. My system is bogged down. It's always been running. We just didn't know about it. And it's normal. You start using your task manager or on the Mac, the activity monitor, and looking at there's dozens of things going on. Hit Control-Alt-Delete on a Windows system and look at the processes. There are dozens of them going on. Don't freak out. That's normal. That's how a modern computer works. In fact, it's desirable. You know, in the days of DOS, a computer could do one thing at a time. But we are a little bit beyond those days. When you have a GUI, a graphical user interface, when you have networking, when you have devices, all of them are beaconing all the time. They're talking all the time. There's lots of handshaking going on. That's normal. And it really, given the amount of bandwidth and the speed of our processors and the amount of memory, it is not something to worry about. It's one of the reasons it's hard to figure out if you've got an infection, if there's an actual problem. Same thing that's going to the doctor's office. You know, they get all these tests and, well, your liver activity is slightly low and your cholesterol is slightly high, and they go on and on and on. Sometimes all of that information sometimes there's something serious going on. But it's hard to tell. There's so much information. It's really true in the computer world. You start looking at these things in detail. Same thing happens when you install a software firewall. All of a sudden, you realize how much activity is going on the internet. You know that your machine, the minute you plug into your cable modem or your DSL modem, is being constantly bombarded several times a second at the very least by attacks, by internet attacks. And of course, when we first run a firewall and see this, people are horrified. Oh my God, what's going on? But my good friend Steve Gibson, the security whiz, calls it internet background radiation. If you ever played with a Geiger counter, you know, one of those devices that measures uranium radioactivity, right? It clicks when there's activity. If you hold it up to radium or uranium or something, it'll really go crazy. But if you just hold it up in the air, it's always clicking because there's constant background radiation. We're constantly being bombarded by atomic particles. It's normal. There's constant background radiation on the internet. There are hackers probing you. It sounds unpleasant. As long as you don't know about it, it's okay. Probing you all the time. Nothing to worry about if you have a router. It's just dropping them. Nothing's happening. It's just dropping them right off. Steve did a segment on Security Now, one of our podcasts, about router logs. Same idea, you know, there's a firewall log where you take a look at what's going on. And you might say, wow, how do I even get any internet traffic going? I'm being, constantly bombarded by pings and all sorts of malformed packets and all sorts of stuff. Well, we have a lot of headroom. There's a lot of bandwidth. It doesn't shut you down. It really doesn't. So I think sometimes we are overzealous in our attempt to make a clean system. Ignorance is bliss in this case. San Diego, Ken, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ken. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. Hey, I'm a lifelong Windows user, and I just purchased a MacBook. And there's a couple decisions I need to make. You know, you get the 30-day trial with iWorks and Office.
Yep.
Which one should I go with?
You know, it really depends on who you're working with. If you work with other people who use Microsoft Office, you probably should get Office.
Okay.
Just because Microsoft Word on the Mac is completely compatible with Microsoft Word on Windows, Microsoft Excel, ditto, PowerPoint, ditto. I don't use Office. For instance, when I give speeches, I use my Apple's Keynote, which is part of their iWork package, as opposed to PowerPoint. Not because Keynote's better, but just because it's different. I think it looks better aesthetically. It doesn't have as many features as PowerPoint, but I just like the different look. So in my case, I don't have to work with anybody else. I'm not sharing PowerPoint slides with anybody else.
Okay.
So if you're working in an environment where other people are using Windows, you probably want to use Office.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to be, but I will be starting up a couple blogs. Does that have anything to do with it?
I wouldn't use iWeb, which is part of the iLife software for making a blog. You can, but The problem is you're then sealed forever into the world of iWeb, and iWeb has some problems. I don't like it. I for the same reason I don't recommend a front page for Microsoft. It's a solution that locks you into iWeb for the rest of your life. I don't think that's a good idea. I prefer to see open standard. So now Pages, which is Apple's word processor, is really more like Microsoft Publisher than like
Word. The Dayfire has now.
Oh, did I lose you?
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Okay, and then, I mean, you were saying something about Pages.
Oh, Pages. I don't think Pages is as capable a word processor. It's not my favorite Mac word processor. It's certainly not Word. But Word is overkill for a lot of people. I mean, I think I use Nisus Writer, which is a less expensive word processor. It's very capable, but not nearly as powerful as either Word or Pages. Pages is good for layout. I have my kids use Pages for schoolwork because it's great for creating graphical layouts. It's more like Publisher, frankly, than it is like Word. So okay. I'm not sure. I bought it. I like it. I use it, but it's not necessarily for everybody. It's kind of a specialized tool.
Okay. And then what about the .Mac deal, the $99 a year?
First of all, buy it from Amazon because it's $79. Don't buy it from Apple.
Okay.
But I like it, and I'll tell you why I use it. It's a great backup. You get a gigabyte of storage, and Apple's built this iDisk capability into the Mac. So what you can do is create an iDisk on your desktop that looks like a local folder. You copy stuff to it, and it's automatically backed up to the net. So my most important documents, books I'm working on or things like that, I have in the iDisk. That way they get copied to all my systems. It's good for multiple Mac systems, which you don't have. But if you had multiple Mac systems, it's good because your address book and your calendar are synced. So it's good for that. Other than that, I don't know if it's that useful. I think if you only had one Mac, probably not that useful.
Okay.
If you got more than one Mac, it's absolutely worth the money.
And then what about, I mean, you mentioned like backup and things like that.
It's good for backup, I have to say, but it's only a gigabyte. So that's a little expensive, $79 for a gigabyte.
Okay. So what kind of backup would you recommend? Well, I'm primarily talking about pictures and movies and things like that that I want to back up.
Yeah. See, those are too big to put on .Mac, really.
Okay.
My best recommendation, even for a laptop, is to get an external hard drive.
Okay.
Now, you probably don't have that big a laptop drive anyway. It's probably 80 gigs. Yeah. So you can get, a 200 gig external for $150 and back up to that. There's a very good program I highly recommend for all Mac users called Super Duper. It's free. If you want some advanced features, it's shareware. You can pay for it. But the free version has enough features for what you need to do. And use Super Duper to back it up to the external drive. Just whenever you're hooked up, whenever you're home, back everything up.
Okay.
And that way you have two copies of all your pictures, all your music, all your documents.
Where do you buy the hard drive that you recommend?
Anywhere. The nice thing about that, your Apple, is it'll use any hard drive. You can go to somebody like LaCie, or Otherworld Computing, MacSales.com, which specializes in Mac hard drives. But the truth is, any external hard drive will work. I like FireWire better than USB. Since you've got the option of FireWire, it's faster, so choose that. But any external hard drive will work fine. And that's really, for most people, that's the best way to back up. Periodically, it wouldn't be a bad idea to burn a DVD or a CD of your disks and put them somewhere else in a safe deposit box at work, somewhere, where at a third location, especially pictures.
Well, I've been told the CDs don't last, they only last for a few
years.
Don't
know that yet.
Okay.
They lasted so far.
Yeah.
There are stories floating around about CDs that are failing, but you're not going to just use one CD. You're going to back it up every month or so. So you'll have multiple CDs. I think to the best of our knowledge, that's a good way to back up.
But a CD only holds like 700 megabytes.
That's why a DVD might be better. You have 4.7 gigs, yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't hold a whole hard drive. You're right. You may have to make regular multiple disk backups and that kind of thing. It's just what I do is every time I... every few months when I have a number of new pictures, you know, about a DVD's worth, I'll just make a copy of it and I'll label it. I'll say, you know, December 2005 through February 2006.
You think a disk is safer long term than on a hard drive?
Unclear. It's good to have both. Hard drive's faster and easier.
Yeah.
The disk is more an insurance policy.
Okay. Okay.
You can never back up too many copies of this stuff because it's precious. Enjoy your MacBook. You know, there have been issues with the MacBooks. Apparently, Apple's just admitted that they have been shutting down spontaneously. They moo, they whine, they moan. I haven't had any of these problems. I guess I've just been lucky. But there have been some manufacturing issues. I'm sure they're worked out by now. You know, this is when something's brand new, it's often there are often issues. And it's true, they do. The white ones do discolor. But I think, again, if you're having these problems, Apple has now admitted to all of them. And if you call Apple, I think they'll make it good. I think they are now actively replacing them if they have that problem. I think the shutdown problem was a heatsink issue. It was an overheating issue. And as many laptops do, if they get too hot, they'll turn themselves off. I've yet to have anything like that happen to my MacBook. I guess I got lucky. 1222, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Ken Gallagher, tomorrow, 3 to 5 p.m.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. The show notes are online and available to you 24/7 by going to KFIAM640.com, clicking shows, and then my name, Leo Laporte. It's the official website on that page. That'll take you to leo.am. And this is Saturday's show, 281. We'll be back with more of your calls, 1-800-520-1KFI, but news is next right now at 1229. It's Lisa Osborne in the KFI News Center.
Live streaming 24/7, KFI, AM640.com.
KFI AM640.com. 12:38 on KFI, AM640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We're brainstorming in the chat room for, like, I need another podcast for new podcasts for me. I already do, what, 8, 9? I've got two more coming. I don't know if I really want to do another one. But we've been talking about coffee and tea because I'm a big tea drinker, and I just got a new espresso machine. And we were thinking maybe I should do a tea podcast about drinking tea. And Dan came up with a brilliant name, ITEA. So it's kind of computers and tea. Maybe not. Bert says, why not just tea time with Leo? I don't think so. I think I've got enough on my plate right now. I really, really do. 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1534. That's my phone number. Terry's in Texas. Hello, Terry. Welcome to KFI in Los Angeles.
Hi, Leo. I have missed you on Tech TV, and thanks to KFI and your podcast to keep you in touch with the rest of us.
Yeah, and you know, I think I have a face for TV. So for radio. So I think I'll keep doing the radio. I think it's better for me. Yeah.
Well, I just took 3 years off from being a webmaster, and I'm fixing to be wearing that hat again.
Cool.
And when I was doing it before, I used Front Page, and that was a program that I love to hate. And I just wanted to get some advice about what I might want to look for now that I'm going to be responsible for that again.
You know, what's changed since you were webmaster is that people very rarely now design static web pages. That is, do the HTML and the coding for a page that doesn't change. There are still cases where you do that. In fact, Apple, believe it or not, does its web page that way. I think with Dreamweaver, which if you're going to do static web pages, no question about it. Adobe bought Macromedia, so it's an Adobe product now. They killed or are going to kill Go Live. So Dreamweaver is the king of the hill. And much better than Front Page. Similar in the sense that it's a WYSIWYG editor. What you see is what you get. You'll work as if in a word processor. You make the fonts and everything, and it writes the HTML for you. And the nice thing about Dreamweaver, unlike FrontPage, is it does it all standards compliant. It's very smart about checking the browser and outputting appropriate code for that browser. You don't have to think about that. And nowadays, that's another big issue because you've got, you know, you got Firefox on one side and an Explorer on the other, Opera, and they all render pages a little bit differently. This was a problem 3 years ago. You'd think it had been fixed. No, it's worse, Terry. It's worse.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, if you're going to do static pages, Dreamweaver, but more and more web sites now are dynamic. And this was, of course, happening 3 years ago, but it's really happened almost across the board, where you have a database, even if it's just a blog, where you have a database of content, and you have an engine, a program, PHP or Perl or ASP.NET, that generates the page by merging the data from the database, the content, with page design templates, usually in CSS, and then draws the page based on that. And there are reasons to do it that way. First of all, content is completely separated from layout. We started moving that way 3 years ago, and it's really come to fruition, where CSS is everywhere. And CSS doesn't contain content. It's just layout information. And so we've separated content from design. And we now use these engines because so many of the content creators are not webmasters. They are reporters or writers or bloggers or videographers. And so they don't want to look at HTML. They don't want to look at web design. They don't even care about the design. They want to put their content up. So nowadays, for instance, if you're a blogger and you run a program like, say, WordPress, you'll be working in an interface that looks kind of like a word processor. You type your stuff in, you press submit. The WordPress engine puts your content into a database, usually MySQL database. And then when somebody comes to your page, merges that content from the database with the CSS. So what webmasters do nowadays is kind of different.
So it's very easy to update without having to go back and hard code.
Oh, it's beautiful. If you want to see a wonderful example of this, go to CSS Zen Garden. Let me see if I can find the exact URL. CSS Zen Garden is a site that was created. It's csszengarden.com, created by a web designer. To illustrate this exact point, the content of the page is static. It never changes. And then people submit new designs to CSS Zen Garden. And what you'll see is how, by divorcing design from content, you're able to give a page an amazing range of looks without in any way affecting the content. The content is done completely separately. So it's a wonderful example of what can be done with CSS, which stands for cascading style sheets. But actually, it may be not an unfamiliar concept to people who've used word processors, where you had a style sheet describing the layouts. It's similar to that, where you have the content on the page, and then the styles determine how the content is displayed.
It sounds great. May I ask one more really brief question?
Yes.
About I'm going to be purchasing a new desktop. And I've been hearing that it may be good to wait until October to do that. Is it worth the wait?
I don't think so now. I think that we have seen the what people were probably talking about then was the new Intel chips. And they're out. And PCI Express is out. And the video cards are out. The displays are there. Everything that's going to be in place for the Christmas holiday buying season, it comes into its fore now. The only thing that's missing, and Microsoft's kicking itself, they wish they could have had it by now, is the new operating system, Vista. That won't be out till January. So if you, and there is something to be said for buying, if you're buying a new machine, to buy it with the version of Windows that you're going to be using installed. It's, you know, nobody wants to upgrade.
Right.
So if you feel like you're a Windows guy and you really do want Vista, you probably will be waiting till maybe not even January, February or March.
I have always waited till the second release.
Yes,
and before I switch over. So,
you may be waiting till 2010 for the second. You know, and you're probably right in this case. Vista is really almost a rewrite from scratch. It's based on Windows Server 2003, but Microsoft has rewritten significant parts of the code, which maybe needed to be done to be updated, but it also means that there are a lot of question marks, particularly regarding security, but also reliability.
Leo, thank you for your airtime and keep up the good work.
You're welcome. And I do highly recommend, even if you're going to be taking advantage of these databases and these web engines. I think it's good to have a copy of Dreamweaver. If you're a webmaster, Dreamweaver allows you to do things like create CSS. And it takes care of a lot of, you know, you avoid syntax errors and things like that. It's a, it's a, it's certainly a worthwhile program to have. But I find now a lot of what I would have considered web design, the stuff that I would have done years ago, I'm often working in not HTML, but in CSS files, sometimes template files, which are which is XHTML. It's a mix of HTML and other stuff. And much less so doing static HTML pages. That's kind of old school design nowadays. Yeah, like, you know, 2004. Old school. It's all changed a lot. See, take a look. It's CSSZENGARDEN. Zen Garden. CSSZenGarden.com. And you can actually look at, you know, the default page, but then on the right, you'll see, you know, a few designs, but then there are probably 100 designs. They made a wonderful book out of it. And you'll be blown away when you click these designs at how different a page can look. Same content. Exact. It doesn't change the content. It merely changes the CSS files. And those are the files that determine how something looks. Click along and you'll see what a huge difference the CSS can make. 12:47, 13 away from 1. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
The Jesus Christ Show, tomorrow morning, 6 to 9 a.m., KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
12:55, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. James Sanberdu, welcome to KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, James.
Leo, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. I've been building PCs since the first Pentiums came out. And
You're an old-timer.
Don't date me too much. Hey,
if you're an old-timer, I'm an even older-timer. So it's okay.
No, I've appreciated all your past shows and your Thanks. Television and everything else. And I've got a question. I'm very leery about Vista, and I'm not sure if I really want to even get into it. That leaves me with a Mac, which the learning curve shouldn't be too hard.
Yeah, but you can't build your own Mac, unfortunately.
Well, that was part of my question here. I wanted to know about hardware compatibility between the two.
They're very compatible. Essentially, because Apple's gone to Intel, there isn't much difference. Mm-hmm. For a long time, Apple was using stock PC parts and everything but the processor. Now that the processor's Intel, if you go out and you buy a Mac, mm-hmm. except for the firmware, except for the boot, mm-hmm. everything is the same as a Windows PC. Now, Apple has gone to the EFI bootable interface instead of BIOS. They don't use BIOS as a PC does.
Okay.
By the way, EFI was designed by Intel and Microsoft.
Interesting.
But Microsoft hasn't yet moved to EFI, and I don't think Vista will be EFI, but I think you'll see EFI machines pretty widely in the next few years on both sides.
Yeah, but I mean, well, if I, let's say I bought an off-the-shelf Mac, I don't want to build one.
You can't build one because Apple's essentially locked the platform.
I got you.
Yep.
Would, like, graphics cards?
Yes, you can put in your own graphics cards. In many cases, you have to make sure that they have an Apple drivers, of course, because the operating systems do.
Okay, the Apple drivers.
Yeah. Generally, you know, it's Apple users, Mac users, don't do the same kind of upgrading that PC users are used to.
Okay.
So if you want to do upgrading, you're going to have to buy a Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And they only right now stock four different video cards, to my knowledge, that you can choose from.
I see.
And then you can put in other cards, but you have to check carefully to make sure they're compatible. It's not like a PC where everything works with a PC because that's the market.
No, I understand. My issues would be minor in that area.
Are you a gamer?
Not really, but I like things to happen fast. I'm on the thing most all the day.
I think really the people who are upgrading video cards are essentially gamers. If you're not a gamer, you're going to get, you know, a good video card that'll last you as long as the rest of the hardware lasts you. There's not much to upgrade there. As far as upgrading RAM and hard drives, it uses stock PC parts.
Okay, those were my next two questions.
Yeah, those are stock. Those are absolutely stock. In fact, I recommend that you buy the minimal RAM from Apple and buy third-party RAM.
Gotcha.
Although, okay. There's a little caveat there on these new Mac Pros. They're using special heat sinks on their RAM, which, and I would, you know, of course, this is just a way to get you to buy proprietary RAM from them. I'm not sure. I think everybody will come out with comparable RAM.
No, I'm familiar with that part of modding cases. Yeah. It's something I've been doing for a long time, and, you know, overclocking and getting to all
One thing you're going to see if you do have an appreciation for case design is that Apple's tower cases are works of art. Just go to an Apple store and open up a Mac Pro, and you will see things a thing of beauty. I mean, I'm not kidding. They are really good at design.
Oh, I have every every piece of faith in you that they are, and that's what I've got to do.
It's good hardware. It's really good hardware. I think they do a very good job. They've had some quality control issues with these laptops, these new laptops, but their desktops have always been good hardware. I use a G5 tower for all of my professional work. You know, all the editing I do, all the podcasts. And it's been rock solid. I mean, rock solid. I don't think I've had a crash in 2 years of operation. And that's what you're looking for, really. If you're working, if you're trying to get work done, you need something reliable. Have I upgraded the video card? No. In fact, I'll probably upgrade the machine before I upgrade the hardware. I did put additional hard drives in, faster hard drives. I did put additional RAM in. That's really the limit of what you want to do on a Mac. And if you get a mini or you get a iMac, you probably really don't want to do much to it at all. They're really not upgradable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 1259, Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
September 9th, 2006.
Mostly sunny this afternoon, comfortable temperatures, highs in the 70s and 80s. Clouds moving in late tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s. Sunday, sunny by afternoon and a little bit warmer than today at 77 in Lake Forest, 73 in Seal Beach, 73 in Westwood, and at 74 degrees in Burbank. KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. It's 106. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Thank you, Lisa. 106, time for me, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. I'll be here till 2. And then it's Dr. Dean Adell. He's a doctor. So you can ask him your personal physical health questions. Don't ask me. I don't know. But you can ask me your PC health questions. That's what I'm here for. 1-800-520-1KFI. John and Ken, a fresh show at 2. I'm sorry, at 3, right after Dr. Dean. And then Wayne Resnick and The Real Story from 5 to 8. Joe Hicks tonight, 8 to 10. And coast to coast all night long. Make sure you keep your radio right here, KFI. KFI, number one station in all of Los Angeles. I love that. I love being number one. Jeff Torrance, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Leo. I'm looking at tablet hybrids for business school. I wanted to know what you thought about that. And also, I'm looking to get kind of a package. I'm going to get a new phone that has, you know, kind of the new Windows CE and everything like that. So I'm trying to put together a package that will help me get through my information need for business school. I just wanted to see what you thought about all that.
Great idea. I have an HP tablet convertible. I like the idea of the convertibles because then you have kind of the best of both worlds. You have a tablet and all the tablet features, but... And by the way, there will be a Vista, a tablet Vista. But I have to say, if I were going to buy a tablet now, I probably would buy the Lenovo ThinkPad X.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I actually already ordered one of those.
But, too late, huh?
I was starting to doubt myself.
No. The HP's fine. I bought it because I think PC Magazine gave it a very high review, and it's fine. But even though IBM has sold its ThinkPad division to Lenovo, I think Lenovo has kept the quality up and is so far doing very good hardware. In fact, they've done some innovation. Before they sold it, IBM started making the X series, and I think these are definitely the best tablets out there.
Okay, do you suggest anything that would enhance kind of the I mean, I don't know about the durability of it and everything, but I'm also looking for software and stuff that would help as far as, you know, taking notes in class. I'm trying to go totally paperless is what I'm going for. So
yep.
I got Adobe and stuff like that so that I can make everything electronic. But I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for anything else I might need.
Well, of course, OneNote is the Microsoft program designed for tablet that is designed for note-taking. Certainly worth taking a look at. But there is a program I like better than OneNote that is free, unless you want to use the pro version. It's called Evernote. And I would
Evernote.
I would, you know, I don't know if the Lenovo's come with OneNote or not. It's, I'm sure they do. If
no,
they,
I had to add it. I had to add it to the software.
You have
pack
to buy it.
I did
okay.
get OneNote. Yeah,
it's well worth having OneNote. I would download Evernote. I would download Evernote, not download okay. Evernote. I would download Evernote because it's free just to take a look at it. It has a slightly different metaphor. It's kind of a continuous ribbon of paper. And I liked it better, but for what you're doing, it might be OneNote's better. But certainly you want one or the other because those are essentially note-taking applications.
All right, so I've never used a tablet before. Is there any kind of learning curve to the, to the writing process?
Yeah, there's a huge learning curve. One of the things I liked about Evernote is you take these notes and they stay. There's when you write on a tablet, you're either writing in ink, which just preserves basically your handwriting, your drawing, or you convert it to text. And OneNote has kind of a ungainly process for doing that. But one of the advantages of Evernote is that you don't have to convert it to text. It's automatically indexed anyway. So you can search through your ink as well, and I just really like Evernote. I think they've done they're basically trying to be a next generation OneNote. As far as other learning curves, I think you'll find that you end up using it as a laptop at least as often as a tablet. But I think once you get to class, you're right. A tablet's probably a pretty good way to go. You know, if I were a student nowadays, I probably would definitely look at something like that. I think it's a good idea.
One thing that was nice is actually the Lenovo's come with an embedded microphone, so you can actually record courses while you're actually taking notes.
Isn't that great?
And everything
yeah, like. And I think that's a very good idea. And you can embed it in your OneNote document. So
now, as far as handheld devices, I'm actually looking at getting a phone, one of those Trio, maybe 700s, so that I could also share documents over phones and stuff like that. Any quick suggestions for kind of a handheld Palm that would double as a phone as well?
I've not been enamored of Windows Mobile 5. I have to say I'm a little disappointed with that, mostly because I just think the Windows operating system is a little overcomplicated for a phone. It's gotten better. You know, it's more phone-like than it used to be, but it's still... You know, your phone shouldn't crash. Your phone, you know, your phone shouldn't get confused. It shouldn't, and it's really more of a computer than a phone. So that's my problem with it. On the other hand, the way you're talking about using it, you do really, what you're looking for is a handheld computer that happens to have phone capabilities. And I think
I want to be able to share information between the tablet and the phone, and that way I can send it to classmates and stuff like
that. I think that's sensible.
Yeah.
I think that's a very sensible use. If you're going to go with Verizon, one of the limitations of Verizon is you can't use that phone as a data phone with your laptop, which really drives me crazy. So T-Mobile.
Okay, I'm actually using Sprint.
Sprint's fine. Sprint has no problem. And that will limit your choices. It means you're probably, the 700 is absolutely the way to go.
Okay. Do the new 700s have Wi-Fi as well? I mean, do they do Wi-Fi access?
No, which is dumb.
Okay.
The 700 the new one might.
Yeah.
I think it might. You have to look at it. Was it WX? I can't remember. It might, but the 700W did not. So I'll have to look. You know, that's actually a really good question. Let me see if the 700WX, and that's Sprint. That's the one you'd get. Let me see.
Right. I'm looking. I heard that from somebody, but I just wanted to find out because
it's fast.
It's
you know,
not
the
worth
Evdo,
it for me.
The Evdo is very fast. It doesn't look like it has Wi-Fi. I'm looking at the reviews. I think that's kind of disappointing, frankly.
Well, what's the upgrade? If it doesn't have Wi-Fi, what is it upgrading?
Good question. It's a different screen. No, it's actually the same screen. Does not have Wi-Fi. It's just basically the difference is it's doubled the RAM. That's it. So is it better? No. It's a fine phone. I don't have any problem with it. For the Windows Mobile, you don't have that many choices. You might look at the 6700. It's a little clunky, but it is Windows Mobile. That's the one with the slide-out keyboard.
So they're trying to make sure that you have to buy their Wi-Fi card as well as a phone.
That's right. That's right. Probably the reason they do that.
All right. You've been a great help.
I do. And by the way, the 6700 does have Wi-Fi. So if you want Wi-Fi, I think the 6700 is probably the way to go. It's a little clunkier. But it's more of a computer. Wi-Fi. It's like a mini computer. Yeah, it does Wi-Fi.
That's the 6700, and that has Bluetooth as well.
Yes, that's the HTC handset. I think it's the Tornado, and Sprint offers that. It's a PPC 6700. I'm sorry, it's the Apache model. And it, but it, you'll see it's a little thicker because but it has a real keyboard, which is kind of neat. It slides out.
Oh, okay.
So I would, if what you want is Wi-Fi and you want really a basically a small computer, it's a pretty good choice.
Okay.
All right. Hey, good luck. What are you gonna? What kind of what kind of business you want to do?
You know, I'm actually looking at strategic consulting, but right now I work in the space industry, so
interesting.
That'll be a little bit of a jump.
Interesting.
So.
Well, it's good. You know, that's a great thing to have that as you go into business school because you have an expertise that you're adding to the business. And I think that's
yeah.
Good.
Well, classes start in a couple weeks.
Good luck.
So I want to be all prepared walking in.
Good luck. Watch out,
Thanks so much.
Watch out, McKinsey. Here comes Jeff. All right, take care, guy. Good luck too. 115, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, Martha, West Hollywood. Welcome.
Leo, I'm thinking about getting my crotchety old dad a freestanding internet radio receiver because he's 87 and he's declared
Perfect.
Himself not interested in computers, but I think
Perfect.
This could be like a good gateway drug.
I love that idea. What kind of music does he like?
All kinds. I mean, he used to be a ham radio fan, too, so I figured he was going to need a DSL line, right?
Yes, he's going to need high-speed internet.
But the thing is, I just want it freestanding. He doesn't want a computer. And I read an article about 6 months ago that I think Philips and maybe somebody
mm-hmm.
else were
That's
just
right.
coming out with just the radio.
Yep.
So what can you tell me? What does he need?
There are a number of...
Can you
recommend one? I haven't tried any of these because I have a computer, right? So do I need... I don't really need an internet radio receiver. But you're right. Philips makes one. There's the Penguin. I think... I wonder if SoundBridge has a standalone...
Yeah, I don't know anyone who's got one. I figured you might.
I don't have one, but you probably should review them. My recommendation would probably be the SoundBridge.
SoundBridge.
Yeah, it's from Roku, R-O-K-U Labs.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, let me see if this is, it's Wi-Fi, which is nice. So he can take it anywhere in the house, right?
Excellent.
It is, basically looks like a tabletop radio, has pretty good speakers, has a built-in subwoofer. Has a real radio as well.
Ah, excellent.
So you're kind of, basically, you're giving him something he's going to say, oh, I know what this is. It's a radio.
Right. I figured it's a good transitional piece.
Exactly. And then he pushes a button, and he's getting internet radio.
Right. And there's presets, or can you program in your own, or I'm assuming both?
That's a good question. I'm pretty sure what they would do is they would do, you would be able to program them, of course, but you'd do a preset. It supports Rhapsody. Which is an online music service, but you can also, if anything is streaming AAC, which is a lot of internet radio now, it'll work fine. So it's probably you would have to come over and program it in for him somehow.
No, that's fine. That would be great because like, quality time is a good thing. Now, I'm in L.A. Anybody in town that you think might be carrying these so I can paw at them?
I do not know. That's a good question.
I'll do a search.
Yeah, the SoundBridge, I don't know if they sell them in stores if it's only online, but I bet you they do. And it'd certainly be worth looking at before you. But I think that this would be a good choice, though. It's called SoundBridge Radio from Roku, R-O-K-U.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I've used Roku, particular one, but I've been very happy with Roku. And if he does get a computer, this can also be used as a remote speaker for his computer, PC or Mac. So it is exactly what you... It's a wedge. It gets him in there. I would look for something... I don't know for an older person if this would be good, but I would look for something that supports Pandora. Man, I love Pandora. Have you tried Pandora? Pandora.com. It's free. They call it a music discovery service. The way it works is you go to Pandora.com and you can create your own stations. You enter in artists you like or songs you like. And Pandora has this very sophisticated algorithm. It's based on the Music Genome Project, where they brought in a bunch of musicians and had them categorize music. A lot of different parameters, you know, singer, songwriter, you know, minor, major keys, but even more detailed than that. And then based on these categorizations, they make recommendations. So you enter in, I like Joni Mitchell, Leonard Cohen, and James Taylor. That's one of my stations for when I'm in a mellow mood. And then what happens is they play music from those artists, but they'll stick in music from comparable artists based on their music genome. And the idea is introduce you to new music. I think for an older person, it would actually be a good idea because he could then enter in the style of artists that he really likes, and that's all he'll hear. but he'll hear new music. It won't just be limited to, you know, you'll enter in Glenn Miller, Benny Goodman, and you might get Tommy Dorsey, too, to stuff that he hadn't entered in. So I think that's a PANDORA.com. And I know there are at least a few, and Roku might be one of them. The Soundbridge, I noticed, supports it. The number of them support Pandora. 119, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
What do you get when you mix more stimulating talk radio to your weekends? Duh. More stimulating weekends.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Let's go to Pasadena. Say hi to Dan. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, Leo. Love the show.
Thank you, sir.
I got a couple of really quick questions for you.
Okay.
I'm a Mac user, but I have a PC laptop, and it's XP Home Service Pack 1.
Okay.
And now I'm getting all these pops up that say, hey, Microsoft's not going to support this after October. You need to upgrade to Service Pack 2.
Right.
Now, I've heard if you do the download, you may run into problems. Should I install Service Pack 2 from the disk? And do I even really need Service Pack 2 because I only use this for a couple of tasks, like accounting?
Do you go online? Like, does the computer go online?
Yeah, it tells me, you know, go online and download this.
No, but I mean, do you use it online?
Yes, I do, but not for email.
Then you need Service Pack 2. If you go online with it at all, you need it because there are a number of serious flaws that were patched with Service Pack 2 that hackers know about now and are using to attack systems.
Should I use it from the disk, or is it okay to download Service Pack 2?
You know, Service Pack 2 upgrades are very problematic because it's a major, it's really an operating system upgrade, much more than just a patch. And the problem seems to be that the more the system's been used, the more you've installed on it, the more it differs from the original install, the more likely you're going to have problems. My suspicion is a lot of those problems are caused by spyware on the system that conflicts with Service Pack 2. But you're right that if you install from the disk, you're going to be less likely to have problems with interrupted downloads and things like that. So, yes, that's always, in the past, that's one of the things I've recommended is get the full version and install from that. Either get it by mail or download it. It's 273 megabytes. Download it, put it on a CD. But even then, you may still have problems depending on how clean your system is.
Well, it's fairly clean, but if I wanted to get the disk, where do I get it? Do I go to Microsoft?
Yeah, there's a link. I don't know if they're still giving it away for free. They were for a while. There's a link in the show notes to the, if you go to the tips page at leo.am and go, there's a Service Pack 2 article, and it has links to the download, so you can download all 273 megs or the page where you can order it from Microsoft.
I think I'd rather order it just to be safe.
It's worth doing. It's an important upgrade, but it is a risky upgrade, and it's a tough thing to recommend because so many people have problems with it. But at this point, if you don't do it, you're in trouble. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 130, it's Lisa Osborne in the KFI News Center.
They've taken Southern California by storm. Now they're invading your weekend.
Go! John and Ken, Saturdays starting at 3.
139 on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I talk about technology every Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 2. Invite you to call and ask your question, make a comment, make a suggestion about anything having to do with tech. Not just computers, the internet, but cell phones, cameras, home theater, PDAs, MP3 players. The phone number is 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1534. Dee Dee and Murrieta, welcome to KFI. Hey, Dee Dee.
Yes, I was wondering if I might ask you, forgive me, I'm a little bit nervous, I haven't called before.
Oh, I'm glad you called. That's
great.
Thank
you. I wanted to ask you, I'm in the market for a new computer, and I know that you recommend Dell. However, your screener had indicated that apparently there's been a few questions about that already, so I thought I might try later on to see if I can't borrow someone's computer to check into the phone notes. I wanted to, or computer notes. I wanted to ask you, though, with respect to printers and scanners and those sort of things, so that when I buy, I'll have an idea of a better package to try to get.
Right.
I don't have any real knowledge
so you don't
about
have a,
that.
So you don't have a computer at all right now?
I don't, but I've used computers in my job, which are temporary positions for education.
So you're very comfortable with computers. It's just
no, I wouldn't say that really.
Somewhat
comfortable.
With
specialized education.
Got it.
Sort of software program.
Got it. Well, you know, what are you going to? What do you want to do? Is I guess always
well, I
the first
question. I want
to become
gainfully employed, actually, and also I'm, you know, I'm not having had one before. I do want to get one that is going to be able to last me for a little while, maybe 4 years, 5 years, like
yes.
you had indicated
yeah.
before.
And so you're really looking for something that you can learn skills with.
Absolutely. Learn and as many skills as possible.
Word processing, internet searching, anything specific?
Absolutely. And I've taken classes, but not having had a computer at home.
Yeah, it's hard to get good at something if you don't
exactly.
have it. It's like learning to play the guitar and not owning a guitar. I mean, that's not...
exactly. Can I borrow yours and
yeah,
practice?
Yeah, exactly. So certainly it's a good idea to buy a computer. It doesn't have to be a Dell. I often recommend Dells just because they're easy for people to buy and they're inexpensive and they're good quality. But there are a lot of companies that make good computers. You probably should wait to buy the printer and scanner and all that still till you decide what computer to buy because, you know, for instance, if you make an order at Dell or one of these online sites, at the end of the order, they say, and this printer works well and this, and they'll actually tell you and you can just buy it all as a package.
Well, I was hoping to do that.
Yeah.
I am hoping to get it all as a
package.
Yeah,
that's the easiest way to do it. Do you want to go to a store or do you mind buying online? Is it uncomfortable?
I don't mind buying online. I was just worried about the support. Since I haven't ever had one before,
right.
I was a little concerned about tech
almost
support,
all
if you
of,
will.
All of these online vendors, Gateway, Dell, all of them, offer in-house, in-home service for that very reason, because they know people are uncomfortable with the idea of having to pack it up and send it back to Dell.
Absolutely.
So for a premium price, I mean, you'll pay more, not a lot more, but you'll pay more, a couple $100 more, you can get in-home service. And,
okay.
And they come to you. There's three levels of service. There's in-home, which is the most expensive. There's depot, where you bring it somewhere nearby and drop it off. And then there's mail it back to Dell. And,
okay.
And so depending on how much you want to spend, for a new user, first-time computer, I think in-home is a great idea. You may never use it, but it's nice peace of mind. So if the hard drive stops working, you know, somebody comes and puts a new hard drive in it.
Right. And so with respect to the printer, the scanner, those sort of things, I get it's so overwhelming to go to the store.
It is, isn't it?
Ads.
It's crazy.
And then you see these units that are combo units, and I don't know if they're really better or not to try to get printer.
Combo's good for, I use a combo in my office, right? Because I don't want to have three different devices. I just want to have all in one fax, scanner,
right.
copier, and printer. That's really four, isn't it? And it makes sense to put it all in one device. And I spent like $700 for a color laser, fax. You know, it's an office machine. For a home, you know, I don't know how much scanning or faxing you're going to do. If you think you're going to do a lot, it might be a good idea to get a all-in-one. It certainly takes up less space.
Do you have recommendations of something that's
sure.
Dell or compatible?
I would say for a home user, Canon's Pixma is a very good all-in-one.
Pixma, P-I-X-M-A?
Mm-hmm. And it's a color inkjet. Inkjets are less expensive than lasers up front. They only cost a couple $100, but they cost more to print. The cost per page is greater. So businesses tend to go with lasers because even though the upfront cost is higher, the cost per page is lower. If you're doing a lot of printing, it's probably more cost effective to buy a laser. But for a home user, inkjet's good. And inkjet does much better photo printing. So you'll be able to print your photos. And down the road, I think that may be something you'll want to do. You know, you haven't said digital photography yet, but
no, I'm not that much concerned about that. May be something in the future, but right now that's not an issue at all.
Right.
And then also I was wondering with respect to trying to determine keyboard and mouse with whether or not to get ergonomic or wireless or not. I hear there's different issues.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I just get the cheap one that comes with the computer. and if you really, you know, down the road you want to get fancy. But, you know, it's silly to spend a lot of money, frankly, on fancy keyboards and mice. They're very simple.
Really?
For mail order, there's really two companies to keep in mind, Gateway and Dell. I think both are very good. There's nothing wrong with either one. In fact, I think PC Magazine recently chose Gateway as its editor's choice. For if you go into the store, models you'll see that are fine are Sony, E-Machines, although E-Machines is a little lower quality. Mostly you'll see HPs, and I think HPs are fine. If you're going to buy in store, an HP Pavilion is probably a very good choice.
But I think you've said before that the problem is there is that you don't necessarily get as good a quality, and then you have to take the software that they come with versus...
You're listening to the show, aren't you?
I've tried as much as I can.
That's great, Dee Dee. That's one of the problems with almost all of these is they use your desktop as an opportunity to upsell you on a bunch of stuff.
Right.
So they load you up, and you'll see all this stuff on your desktop. Just get rid of it, uninstall it, throw it into the trash. You don't need it. And HP is, you're right, notoriously bad in this regard. However, I don't think, you know, I mean, this is just the way it is. If you're going to get a consumer PC these days, you're going to get all that stuff. That's just the
right
way, you know, you get an
AM. Because I feel like I need Office and...
Well, you do want Office, and that's another thing to keep in mind. You know, when you buy a stereo, people forget you got to buy records, too. When you buy a computer, people forget you've got to buy software, too. You know,
that's a good way to put it. That's a good analogy.
Yeah. Just as a record is the content that you're using on the stereo, the software is the content you use on the computer. You can't do anything without it. Now, most computers come with some, but I think it's really a good idea to add that to your budget because you will want Office, and that's going to cost you a couple $100.
A couple hundred.
Yeah, most.
What's the best way to do that? When you get the Dell to tell them to put it on? Or?
Yep, you bet. You just Again, I hate to keep coming back to Dell. It sounds like I'm a Dell fanatic, and I'm not. But for consumers, it's very easy. It's a check mark as you go down, and they, you know, actually, I just to try it out the other day, I actually went through it, and they're about 20 or 30 pages of upsell stuff, of extra stuff to get. So it can get a little tedious. But at least it gives you an idea. It kind of jogs you. Oh, do you need this? Do you need that? And I would say, do the err on the side of no. You know, say get less than rather than more. Sometimes new users say, well, I need to. It's like when you go buy a car. Well, you need the undercoating, don't you? You need the leather.
Right, right.
You don't need all that stuff. So, and you can always, especially with software, you can always get it later. Hardware, you kind of want to get the hard, especially a new user, the hardware you're going to need on the machine. So Gateway, Dell, if you're buying in the store, HP or HP Compaq, it's the same company now. IBM, I think they call them Lenovo's now. I think they make good desktops. Sony makes good desktops, although Sony's support is notoriously bad. Just I think it's because they're a Japanese company and they don't get it.
Mm.
Let's see, any other names? E-Machine is okay, not great.
I'm concerned that I've heard that might not be enough for what I'm looking for.
Budget machines, and they're for people who really don't want to spend much money, but yet want, you know, to have a computer in the home. And I think if that's the case, that's fine. But if you can afford to spend a little more, and we're not talking a lot, we're talking under $2,000, probably with everything, including your printer and the software, around $1,500.
Really?
Is that a lot more than you thought?
No, I think that's excellent when you're talking about the software and everything.
Don't spend more than that. Don't spend more than $2,000, let's say, because you'll probably be buying an enthusiast system with stuff that you're not going to use.
Okay. Now,
do get a 19-inch LCD display.
Okay.
You really will want that.
It's funny because all the time I was thinking, okay, I need 15. Then I thought, no, I need 17, and it just keeps growing.
Trust me, 19.
Okay.
15's right out. 17 maybe, but honestly, the bigger display makes a big difference in productivity. Word processing, spreadsheets, websites, the more real estate you have on the screen, the easier it is.
Excellent point. Now, do you have recommendations with respect to bookkeeping type programs?
If it's for home bookkeeping or employment, QuickBooks is what everybody uses.
Okay, so the QuickBooks Pro.
Unless they're big, in which case, actually, I would get basic. You don't need Pro.
Just get basic.
Yeah. Well, first of all, if you get a job, they're going to be telling you what you'll be using. Obviously, a lot of accountants and smaller businesses use QuickBooks. If you get any bigger, you'll be using the big packages like Peachtree. That's a whole nother. You wouldn't want to believe
me. That's thousands of dollars.
You're not going to put that on a home system.
Oh, no.
Even QuickBooks is very expensive. Get the smallest version of QuickBooks. QuickBook Basic, I think, is $200 or $300. It's a very expensive package.
Okay.
And you know what? It's not that hard. You're not gonna. You may not even really need to train on QuickBooks. I don't think you'll. What you
well,
really want to do.
Course.
Okay.
So you, but the problem is that you just went there and went through the program so fast, yeah, there was no explanation for what you right. were doing. And so you get a certificate and then you really don't even know how to use the program.
Ain't that the truth? Well,
that's
it might be
sad.
Worth it might be worth buying QuickBooks and keeping your own personal books on it just to gain some proficiency. You're right. I think that might be worth doing.
It's like we said earlier, when you've taken the different courses and then you don't have anything to put it to use on, like when you don't have a
right.
guitar.
You need the guitar. So I think you're investing in your career. I think this is worthwhile.
And one last thing, if I might, with respect to email companies, what do you think about Outlook? Do you think a lot of the
That's
businesses...
fine. Everybody uses Outlook or something like it.
They do?
Yep.
Okay.
If you get Office, if you learn Microsoft Office, you are training on the Swiss Army knife that almost everybody uses.
Okay. And the protecting the address, I've heard that I have to learn how to do that.
Protecting the address? You mean your email address?
Right.
Well, all people, you're going to get spam eventually, no matter what. What people are saying is don't give out that address more than you have to. Don't put it online. If you put something on a website, don't put your email address on it. It's easy to create a free email address at Yahoo or Gmail, Google Mail, or Hotmail that you use when you give out addresses. Use that. Don't give out your private address because... once you start getting spam, it's just a pain. You're going to get it eventually. You're just deferring the inevitable, but defer it as long as you can. Dee Dee, good luck. I think this is actually a very smart thing to do. I think you'll get comfortable with it. You may even find you love it. You may find that there's things that you do with this that you're really enjoying. That's why, in general, I don't recommend people buy too little computer, because often they find, hey, I do want to do digital photography. Hey, I do want to do this. And it's nice to have a computer that can grow a little bit. You can grow with. 151, 9 away from 2, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Oh, yeah.
KFI News.
Fox News.
Team to bring you the big stories. KFI, AM 640.
I am out of time. Dr. Dean Adell is coming up next. I'll be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. to talk high tech with you. I do want to say one thing before we go. Bring the music down behind me now here a little bit there, because I want to play you with something. It happened yesterday, 40 years ago, the very first Star Trek.
Space, the final frontier.
So a happy geek anniversary. 1966, September 8th, Star Trek, the first episode, The Man Trap. It only ran for 3 years in prime time, but believe me, it lives on 40 years later, so... happy birthday, Star Trek. Happy birthday to all you geeks. I'll see you tomorrow. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. 159, Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.